Please repeat, you are the original personality of Godhead, who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. Report by His Divine Grace, Asi Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita that one who surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord can get released from the clutches of Yeshas. Anybody know that verse? Interesting. That one doesn't specifically say the one that goes Daivyeshu Maya Dirakya Mamevye Padyante Amitam Tashte. This material energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material energy is very difficult to overcome. One who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond. Krishna is just like the sun. And Maya, or material existence, is just like darkness. Wherever there is the light of the sun, darkness or ignorance at once vanishes. This is actually a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Surya Sama, Maya Hai Andhakar, Yahan Krishna Ahanahi Maya Adhikar. Basically says that this is like the sun, Maya is like the darkness. Where Krishna is, Maya has no jurisdiction. She doesn't have the right to be there. So that's the logo for the Back to Godhead magazine. That's on the front. That statement. Yeah. So people ask how they can be free from Maya. The answer is to be in Krishna consciousness. You add Krishna and Maya gets pushed out. the best means to get out of the world of ignorance is suggested here. The Lord is addressed herein as the original personality of Godhead, Arjun, from whom all other personalities of Godhead expand. The all-pervasive Lord Vishnu is Krishna's plenary portion or expansion. The Lord expands himself in innumerable forms of Godhead and living beings along with his different energies. But Sri Krishna is the original primeval Lord from whom everything emanates. The all-pervasive feature of the Lord experienced within this manifested was also a partial representation. Paramatma, therefore, is included within him. He is the absolute personality of Godhead. He has nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material manifestation because he's far above the material creation. Darkness is a perverse representation of the sun. Therefore, the existence of darkness depends on the existence of the sun. But in the sun proper, there is no trace of darkness. As the sun is full of light only, similarly, the absolute personality of God beyond the material existence is full of bliss. It is not only full of bliss, but also full of transcendental variegatedness. Transcendence is not at all static, but full of dynamic variegatedness. He is distinct from the modes of material nature, from the material nature which is complicated by the three modes of nature. He is Parama, or the chief. Therefore, he is absolute, has manifold energies, and through his diverse energies, he creates, manifests, maintains, and destroys the material world. In his abode, however, everything is eternal and absolute. The world is not conducted by the energies or powerful agents by themselves, but by the potent, all-powerful, with all energies. Janatanandasya Tasmai Shri. So these prayers of Arjuna, like with the prayers of other great devotees, we learn different truths about the personality of God. Prabhupada mentions some of these here that Arjuna is mentioning. So many descriptive words. Basically, the an important point is that Krishna is the source of everything else. Even the other avatars, they also come from Krishna. So this point's made in the Bhagavad Gita in different places. There's one famous verse, 7-7, Mata Pratram Nanya Kinchid Asti Dhananjaya. My Sarvamidam Proktam Sutrim Mani Gana Eva. That every there's no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung on a thread. So when you see a necklace of pearls, you just see the pearls. You don't see the thread. Right? So you might think, what's the importance of this thread? And that's, you don't even see it. Very insignificant. Without the thread, the pearls would be scattered all around, and you wouldn't have a necklace. So Krishna is the underlying basis of everything. And if Krishna wasn't present, nothing would be existing. Everything's resting on him. So, it has nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material manifestation. People miscalculate Krishna because it looks like he has a body. People just assume he has a material body because that's the only kind of bodies they know about. You don't run into people with spiritual bodies every day. You don't really hear about them. They all live in the spiritual world. So they would assume that Krishna has a material body, and they would consider that Krishna was just somebody like them, maybe a little more powerful. For all these demons, they would try to fight with Krishna, not knowing that Krishna was the source of all power. And it was actually completely impossible for them to defeat Krishna unless Krishna wanted to allow them. So Krishna's form actually can't be understood unless one hears about it from the scriptures. Otherwise, one just calculate Krishna to be another material person. But Krishna did so many supernatural things that show that his form wasn't material. Like one of the most impressive things to me is like how he killed that Putana when he was a few days old. Right? Because God is, in every tradition, God is understood to be omniscient. He knows everything. And he's all powerful. There isn't any monotheistic tradition has this idea about God. So this shows, Krishna demonstrates that even when he's a few days old. He demonstrates his omniscience by knowing that Putana is trying to kill him. He knows that this witch has smeared poison on her breast and she wants him to suck it and die. And he's not very happy about that. He also knows that this Putin has been, her whole lifestyle is to, kill babies and drink their blood, which is a disturbance to human society. So, and he knows that he has the power to finish her off. And then and there, even though he's just a few days old, whereas no ordinary human child would be able to understand, that Putana's intention to kill him, and wouldn't have the potency to kill, a full-sized adult. There's never stories of people who are just a few babies a few days old killing adults. So Krishna demonstrated, and that's just the first thing he did that showed that he was omniscient and all powerful. But basically, all his pastimes were demonstrating that. Like, we're just reading how Jarasandha attacked him with 13 divisions of military phalanxes, and how that Krishna, he was just shooting one arrow after another, and he just shot down all the horses, the elephants, fighters. And Jarasandha was the only one left out of thousands of people. And nobody on Krishna's side was killed, but everyone except Jarasandha was killed. And the reason Krishna did that is because he wanted to get rid of all these demoniac fighters, and he knew that if he let Jarasandha live, he would just arrange another army to fight him. In this way, he would be able to accomplish his mission of getting rid of all these people who take pleasure in killing people. And that's what happened. He came with another army of a similar size. Krishna wiped out everyone in the army except Jarasandha. Happened 17 times. And although Jarasandha had undoubtedly heard that some people accepted Krishna as God, even though Krishna wiped out everyone in his army 17 times, it didn't click that maybe these people are actually right. Maybe he is God, and maybe I won't ever be able to defeat him. Because that's the demonic nature, is to be very dull, not actually see what's going on. So even though it's obvious to anyone that Krishna is not defeatable, it wasn't obvious to Jarasandha. So Krishna demonstrated his omnipotence and omniscience. He's not just like some bogus yogi from India who claims to be God because he can produce some particles of gold or something who can transport gold from one place to another. So, right. Verse also talks about, Prabhupada talks about in purport that his body is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. His body, because it's made out of spiritual energy, and the spiritual energy is not affected by anything material. Nothing material affects Krishna's body. So many demons try to like damage Krishna's body with their weapons. Hurl these weapons at Krishna and describe it was Krishna felt it like if you threw a flower garland at an elephant. It was like that significant. these weapons that would have destroyed an ordinary person. So Arjuna is in knowledge of Krishna. He takes pleasure in glorifying Krishna. He knows all these truths. Some of them he's already mentioned in Bhagavad Gita earlier. This is after the battle I'm speaking now. So he'd already spoken Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna had already accepted him, that he was the Lord. And it's funny, the first verse, the first word is Adya, meaning the original. So he's also glorified as Bhagavad Gita's original. And the controller of material energy. So this is Rukmini Dwarasi. So Rukmini is the first of Krishna's queens in Dwarka. There's two chapters in the Krishna book about her. One of them we started reading last night. Turned out we just happened to be on that chapter. And there's a nice prayer by her where she talks about why she was attracted to Mary Krishna, which I thought we could read. find it here. So basically what happened with Rukmini, she was a princess, and Narada used to come to her father's palace and glorify Krishna. So she was attracted by Krishna, hearing his glories. And she wanted to marry Krishna, but her brother didn't like Krishna, her eldest brother. The eldest brother in a Vedic family plays a key role, almost like the father, you know. So, he thought it would be better for her to marry Shishupal, who was actually a cousin of Krishna, but who was a very demoniac. It said that Shishupal, practically as soon as he was born, he started blaspheming Krishna. Krishna said, told his mom that, "I'll tolerate 100 insults, and after that." And then he was a real rascal, but because this Rukmini's brother was demonic, he couldn't appreciate that Shishupala was demoniac and wouldn't be a good husband for Rukmini. So, because Rukmini's father was inclined to his eldest son, he went along with that idea. So this marriage was arranged to Shishupala. Rukmini decided that the only way she could get out of it is if she wrote a letter to Krishna and asked him to kidnap her before her marriage. And she wouldn't have to go through with that. So she wrote this letter and she said all these nice things about Krishna. "My dear Krishna, O infallible and most beautiful one, any human being who happens to hear about your transcendental form and pastimes immediately absorbs through his ears your name, fame, and qualities. Thus all his material pangs subside and he fixes your form in his heart. Through such transcendental love for you, he always sees you within himself, and by this process all his desires are fulfilled." You can see she is, even though she's just some teenage girl, she has a lot of realized transcendental knowledge about Krishna. "Similarly, I have heard of your transcendental qualities. I may be shameless in expressing myself so directly, but you have captivated me and taken my heart. You may doubt my steadiness of character, since how could an unmarried young girl like me approach you without any shame? But, my dear Mukunda, you are the supreme lion among human beings, the supreme person among persons. Any girl, though not yet having left her home, or even any woman of the highest chastity who would desire to marry you, being captivated by your unprecedented character, knowledge, opulence, and position. I know that you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, and you are very kind toward your devotees. Therefore, I have decided to become your eternal maid servant. Dear Lord, I dedicate my life and soul to your lotus feet. I have selected your lordship as my husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme powerful, O lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. That which is enjoyable for the lion is to eat is taken away by the jackal. It will be a ludicrous affair. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I'm taken away by Shishupal and other princes like him. My dear Lord, in my previous life, I may have done public welfare work like digging wells and planting trees or pious activities such as performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices and serving superiors like the spiritual master, brahmanas, and vaishnavas. These activities perhaps have pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana. If this be so, then I wish that you, Lord Krishna, the brother of Lord Balaram, please come here and catch hold of my hand so that I shall not be touched by Shishupal and his company." You can see she was very enthusiastic to attain Krishna. There's So there's a part of this chapter where Srila Prabhupada praises her determination. The letter continues, and she also explained to Krishna why she was anxious to marry him, even though her marriage was to take place with Shishupala, who was also qualified, being the son of a great king. Rukmini said that she didn't think there was anyone greater than Krishna, not even Lord Shiva, who is known as Mahadev, the greatest of the demigods. Lord Shiva also seeks the pleasure of Lord Krishna in order to be delivered from his entanglement and the quality of ignorance within the material world. Although Lord Shiva is the greatest of all great souls, Mahatmas, he keeps on his head the purifying water of the Ganges, which emanates from a hole in the material universe made by the toe of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is in charge of the material quality of ignorance, and to keep himself in a transcendental position, he always meditates on Lord Vishnu or Krishna, and always tries to purify himself with the water of the Ganges. Therefore, Rukmini knew very well that obtaining the favor of Krishna was not easy, as even Lord Shiva must purify himself for that purpose. Surely it would be difficult for Rukmini, who is only the daughter of a Kshatriya king. Thus she desired to dedicate her life to observing severe austerities and penances, such as fasting and going without bodily comforts. If it were not possible in this lifetime to gain Krishna's favor by these activities, she was prepared to die from such austerities and to undergo similar difficulties lifetime after lifetime. Bhagavad Gita has said that pure devotees of the Lord execute devotional service with great determination. Such determination, as exhibited by Rukmini Devi, is the only price for purchasing Krishna's favor. One should be strongly determined in Krishna consciousness. That is the way to ultimate success. So she was very, very bold, writing this letter to Krishna, having him, asking him to come and kidnap her. One interesting part of the pastime is Krishna's reciprocation with her devotion. After he hears the statement, which was read by this Brahmana messenger, he was very much pleased. He immediately shook hands with the Brahmana and said, "My dear Brahmana, I'm very glad to hear that Rukmini is eager to marry me, since I'm also eager to get her hand. My mind is always absorbed in thoughts of the daughter of Bhishmaka, and sometimes I cannot sleep at night because I'm thinking of her." So that's pretty amazing. Krishna is the source of all spiritual material worlds. And this teenage princess has a crush on him. But because he's omniscient, he's completely aware of that, and he completely reciprocates the mentality. So basically, he finds out that the marriage is like the next day. He gets his fastest horses together and hits the road. And he shows up there. While she's walking between the temple and her palace, he comes by and picks her up, puts her on the chariot. And Lord Balaram was worried about him, so he brought some soldiers from the outer dynasty. And of course, the friends of Shishupal. And Shishupal himself weren't happy about that and tried to fight Krishna, but they were like completely decimated. But anyways, it's an elaborate story in it. She's a famous person because although Krishna married many, many, many queens, she's the first one. She's considered the principal queen. And there's a whole other chapter about her, called Krishna's Talks with Rukmini. And in that chapter, Krishna's in a joking mood, and and jokes with her about how actually he's completely unqualified to be her husband. She actually should have married one of these other princes, like Shishupal. And if she wants, she can go and do that. You know? So, and she's like, that's completely, divorce wasn't part of the Vedic culture. And she had many grown-up children at that point, so she's like completely shocked by Krishna's describing himself as completely unqualified and saying that he's about to leave. So she actually fainted in anxiety. Krishna realized that she didn't really take it as a joke. And he apologized. When she realized it was a joke, what she did was she took all the disqualifications that Krishna described about himself and presented how they weren't actually true, or they were true, but they're actually great qualifications if you look at it in another way. She offers a lot of glorification and of Krishna, which is very nice to read. So it's chapter 60 in the Krishna book. You can read it sometime. But in those prayers, she criticizes the illusion of love, the material world. She says, you are the supreme ultimate goal of life. You're the reservoir of all interests of the living entities. Those who are actually well-motivated desire only you. For this reason, they give up everything to attain success. Therefore, they deserve to associate with you. In the society of servitors and served in Krishna consciousness, one is not subjected to the pains and pleasures of material society, which functions according to sex attraction. Therefore, everyone, whether man or woman, should seek to be an associate in your society of servitors and served. You are the supreme personality of Godhead. No one can excel you, nor can anyone come up to an equal level with you. Perfect social system is that in which you remain in the center, being served as the supreme, and all others engaged as your servitors. In such a perfectly constructed society, everyone can remain eternally happy. My Lord, you say that only beggars praise your glories, and that is also perfectly correct. But who are those beggars? Those beggars are all exalted devotees, liberated personalities, and those in the renounced order of life. They are all great souls and devotees who have no other business than to glorify you. Such great souls forgive even the worst offenders. These so-called beggars execute their spiritual advancement in life, tolerating all tribulations in the material world. Dear husband, do not think that I accepted you as my husband out of my inexperience. Actually, I followed all these great souls. I followed the path of these great beggars and decided to surrender my life unto your lotus feet. Dear Lord, you've advised that I select another from princely order and divorce myself of your companionship. And my dear Lord, it's perfectly known to me that you are the reservoir of all good qualities. Great saint persons like Narada Muni are always engaged simply in glorifying your transcendental characteristics. Someone who takes shelter of such a saintly person immediately becomes free from all material contamination. And when he comes in direct contact with your service, the goddess of fortune agrees to bestow all her blessings. Under the circumstances, what woman who has once heard of your glories from authoritative sources and has somehow or other relished the nectarian fragrance of your lotus feet would be foolish enough to agree to marry someone of this material world who is always afraid of death, old age, disease, and rebirth? I've therefore accepted your lotus feet not without consideration, but after mature and deliberate decision. My dear Lord, you are the master of the three worlds. You can fulfill all the desires of your devotees in this world and the next because you you are the supreme soul of everyone. I have therefore selected you as my husband, considering you to be the only personality. You may throw me in any species of life according to the reactions of my fruit of activities. I have the least concern for this. My only ambition is that I always remain fast to your lotus feet, where you can deliver your devotees from illusory material existence and are always prepared to distribute yourself to devotees. My dear lotus-eyed husband, you are self-satisfied. You do not care whether I'm beautiful or qualified. You're not concerned about it. Your non-attachment for me is not at all astonishing. It's quite natural. You cannot be attached to any woman, however exalted her position and beauty. Whether you're attached to me or not, in my devotion and attention, you always engage at your lotus feet. The material mode of passion is also your creation. So when you passionately glance upon me, I accept that as the greatest boon of my life. I'm ambitious only for such auspicious moments. After hearing Rukmini's statement and her glorification of each and every word he had used to arouse her anger of love toward him, Krishna addressed Rukmini as follows. My dear chaste wife, my dear princess, I expected such an explanation from you, and only for this purpose did I speak all these joking words, so that you might be cheated of the real point of view. Now my purpose has been served. The wonderful explanation you have given of my every word is completely factual and approved by me. O most beautiful Rukmini, you are my dearmost wife. I'm greatly pleased to understand how much love you have for me. Please take it for granted, no matter what ambition and desire you may have, no matter what you may expect from me, I'm always at your service. And it's a fact also that my devotees, my dearmost friends and servitors, are always free from material contamination, even though they're not inclined to ask me for such liberation. My devotees never ask me for anything except to be engaged in my service, and yet because they are completely dependent upon me, even if they are found to ask something from me, that is not material. Such ambitions and desires, instead of being the causes of material bondage, become the source of liberation from this material world. My dear chaste and pious wife, I've tested on the basis of strict chastity your love for your husband, and you passed the examination most successfully. I've purposely agitated you by speaking many words not applicable to your character, and I'm surprised to see that not a pinch of your devotion to me has been deviated from its fixed position. So, nice pastime. Not to read the whole chapter 52, 53, and 60. You know that past one, there you can see that it may manifest the pure devotion we aspire for. And it's time to end the class, so we can go on to our other services, like finishing our round and breaking our ecology. Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.